part to my left. And with that, we will go to public comment. This is a time on our agenda for folks to comment to us on items not on our agenda. I have one speaker slip, and that's Eric Greening. We do request people stay within the three-minute time period.
Good morning. I am Eric Greening. An issue arose. But I believe a strong case can be made for the involvement of the Planning Department and your commission. Parks will be bringing an item to the board on September 25th that will include seeking board action to relinquish some or all public trail or pedestrian easements not specifically called out in our county trails plan. This is apparently driven by inadequate financial resources and an obvious criterion for rationing of these resources. The problem that merits the attention of your commission is that many of these easements were conditions of approval on projects you approved, were mitigations that allowed you to certify negative declarations on the assumption that these mitigations would, in fact, happen. How can we walk away from these mitigations? I'm not raising the issue to point the finger at parks. You share in the responsibility for this emerging crisis. When approving mitigations, when weighing private gain with public benefit, have you habitually, tacitly assumed that easements once required would benefit the public without necessarily giving thought to the long-term financial implications for a county department other than planning? I know that on large projects, you often give maintenance responsibilities to homeowners associations, but have you looked at the cumulative fiscal burden of many smaller ones? I raise these questions not to discourage you from continuing to seek pedestrian easements. Our smart growth principles demand that we take non-motorized circulation needs at least as seriously as motorized. When conditioning projects on road improvements, you tacitly hand Public Works the long-term duty of caring for yet more pavement, and Public Works has never come forward seeking wholesale abandonment of roads all over the county. The hue and cry would be deafening. Instead, we somehow find the money to keep maintaining our ever-proliferating pavement. Why, then, is it acceptable to propose such abandonment on pedestrians? Such a double standard flies in the face of smart growth. That said, you need an agenda item before September 25th to answer the following questions. How many of the easements proposed for abandonment were CEQA mitigations? What can your commission do to ensure that they are upheld? How can you craft future mitigations and conditions of approval relative to pedestrian circulation such that they are not threatened with abandonment? Please do agendize this and be heard from before the board gives away what you have labored to secure for the public. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the commission? I'll close the public comment and go to planning staff updates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building. The first item I wanted to update you on was to remind you of your August meeting schedule. You have your regular meeting in August, the first meeting of the month. I believe it's the 12th. No, it's the 9th. And then instead of having your regular meeting on August 23rd, that has been canceled so you could attend the energy conference, I believe it is. And then on August 30th, you have asked to schedule a study session on long-range planning issues that would focus on the conservation element with, again, a focus on energy. So I just wanted to remind you of that revised meeting schedule for August. The next order of business is Matt Jansen's going to update you on the upcoming Coastal Commission meeting in 2 weeks, I believe, and he'll provide you with some information on that.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Matt Jansen, planning staff. Yeah, I wanted to, for not so much our benefit, but anybody that's watching, because I know that most in the room know about this, but yes, the Coastal Commission is coming to town finally in 2 short weeks. They'll be here for the week of July 9th. Their hearings begin approximately at 1 p.m. on the 9th, Monday, and they go through Friday. So they're here for 4.5 days. The focus for us is the Cambria-San Simeon plan, which will be most likely Wednesday afternoon, the 11th. There is a field trip that the commission is taking on Wednesday morning out to Avila Tank Farm, also known as Fossil Point, and the San Luis Lighthouse. So when you look at the Wednesday...
San Luis Obispo County building page, and then show you how we get to our gray water page and what we have available for the public. And if that will come up.
Are we reset?
From our building page, if we go to building permits, construction information and forms, over to building details and information, click on that. We come down here to sewage system information. And under that, we have our gray water page. And we have it broken up into a couple of different systems. One is a direct link to the state page, which goes along with Uniform Plumbing Code Appendix G, which sets the standards for all gray water systems. And it's quite lengthy, and there's a lot to it. For the normal person who wants to do a gray water system in their house, if they start from the very beginning and change the pipes originally, it's a lot more simple than to do it as if they want to do it after the house has already been built, because there's a lot of plumbing that's involved. But this page will show them how they can make those changes, and it goes on for about 15 pages or so, or 12 pages. The other way, what we've done, we've added... the washing machine gray water sump. And I borrowed this from Santa Cruz County. And this is the simplest way of doing a gray water system. It's basically if you have a washing machine that's going into your septic tank or flowing out on the ground or going into the sewer system, you make a few changes to the piping, and then that can go out into a gray water sump, which you can use to water your plants or do whatever else you want with it. It's a real simple, easy fix. We show the picture of how to change the plumbing on the washing machine itself. We show the size of the sump and what the dimensions are, what kind of material is used. And then after that, we go into the process for getting the permit for the gray water sump. We show the setbacks. We show the plot plan that's needed to go along with the plans. And then a brief description of what you can use gray water for, the kinds of plants that do really well with it. Gray water is by nature a little alkaline, and so certain plants don't do very well with it. So we have a list of the plants that do well and a list of the plants that don't do so well with gray water. And we also show that if you have really high pH with your gray water system, there are certain chemicals you can add, like sulfur or ammonium sulfate, to help bring down the pH so that you can raise your plants better. Also on this page, we have a link to the over-the-counter permit so the folks can fill out the whole form at their house and then bring it on in. And then there's a charge at this time of $180.50 for the permitting fee. And once they get all done putting it in the ground, we have them leave it open, and then we do the inspection, and they can click on the online inspection part here to schedule it. And they can use code 458, which is for leach line repair. It's the only thing we have that's similar to a gray water system. So that's basically all I have to say. Are there any questions?
Yes. I have a question. You might understand then the sump. Is the sump the actual storage container? Is that what you refer to?
Yes,
as sump? And so for a lot that doesn't have a steep slope, the sump has to be underground?
Yes,
in this process, so you couldn't just use a gravity feed. You would need a pump then to come up.
if you have a relatively level lot, you'd need a sump pump then to bring the water out.
Some systems will. Some systems won't. I mean, you can design it so it will be gravity flow out to the plants.
If you have, but if you need a fair slope then for that, if you're going, your storage container is underground, you need enough slope to bring it out without some power input. So a bit, okay. So hopefully that could work with
right.
gravity. It's just the problem then with the submerging the storage then if you don't have the height, the drop on your lot, that you have to physically pull it back up again and out.
Correct.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thanks.
And we're trying to stay away from the idea of pumps and surge tanks and everything because it's a lot more complicated. With the washing machine sump, it's a very easy fix. I mean, basically they go out and they dig a hole, they change a few pipes in the house, and they can put the fluid out there.
Well, I'd like to just say I'm very pleased to see.
Other questions? I'm pleased to, obviously. One quick question. You indicated, and it indicates on the screen, there's the over-the-counter permit application.
Mm-hmm.
But did I understand you to say the person downloads it or completes it and brings it in?
Yes.
Do you see in the future the opportunity where it actually can be just an online process, fees paid through credit card or something like that, to where, make it super simple and super inviting for people to do this?
The only reason we would want the person to come in is so we can take a look at exactly what they're doing to make sure it's not going to interfere with other kinds of plumbing, that they have the certain proper setbacks. There are certain setbacks they need to meet, particularly to streams and lakes and housing and other septic tanks and
okay.
et cetera, et cetera. So that's the only reason we would like them to come in.
Okay, great. Well, I'm extremely pleased that we're getting there.
Right.
Anything further on this issue?
Well, just since you brought that up, I thought there was some talk of making that an e-permit option when I was at the desk 2 weeks ago. Has that changed then from the word then?
Yes, it has.
Okay.
It's a bit more complicated because it does have you need to go, we feel we need to go out and inspect it to make sure it's in the ground properly also.
Well, but the inspection would follow.
Correct.
The over-the-counter permit would be the review and the paying of the fees. Is that correct?
Uh-huh. That's true.
I guess I would encourage you to take a second look at that.
Okay. We
make
will.
It easy.
All right. Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you very much. Mr. Hogue, is there anything more?
No, I have nothing further.
Okay. Any questions on planning staff update?
Yes. Just I did think that Mr. Greening's question or request seemed reasonable. If that is indeed coming to us in September, that we put some thought into the issue or problem, maybe. And is there a way to...
There's no item agendized, and you literally have no time on your agendas for additional items between now and September 25th. What I will do is I will contact General Services to get the specifics about the easements proposed to be relinquished, and we'll look at the issue, and I'll report back to you during staff update at a subsequent meeting.
I just have to say I'm very concerned about the issue Mr. Greening raised. This was the first I've heard of it, and I recall very clearly discussions during the Parks and Rec element adoption that the trail alignments that were identified in the Parks and Rec element were a minimum. I mean, they were the standard, but that we were very, very clear that additional, you know, trail alignments or conservation easements or access easements could be conditioned on a case-by-case basis depending on the facts before us. And it feels like a bait and switch to me. I mean, again, I don't want to poke fingers at the planning or the Parks Department. I'm sure they have their reasons, but I think this is something that absolutely deserves our review. And I would suggest that meeting on the 30th that we're designating as a day for a workshop would be a day when we discuss this as well. If we truly have no time on any other agenda, I can't. I don't think that's an option for us not to review this decision.
I would like to hear staff's interpretation of the thing. Just as I heard Mr. Greening discuss it. Sounds to me like there's some real legal issues here if, in fact, this was some CEQA mitigation to put in this or allow for a trail easement. how can they just change that? And I'm sure that's a question larger than the Planning Commission. That's a question that would have to be resolved at the board level, and I'd be interested in the legal analysis of that. But I had a more basic question for County Council. And I've heard this before, and maybe it's this urban legend, that if there is some sort of easement, trail, open space that is granted but never accepted, does that go away after 20 years if it's not accepted by some public entity to actually develop it or use it?
Well, I think if you want to discuss this item, it ought to be brought back as an agendized item. Just briefly to answer your question, offers of dedication that are made under the Subdivision Map Act last for 21 years, and if they're not used and accepted within that period, they can go away. Otherwise, you got to go through the abandonment process to get rid of them. It's not clear to me from Mr. Greening's comments what specific interest in real property that's accepted within a reasonable period of time. What's reasonable can vary from 3 years out to a long period of time. Offers of dedication under the Subdivision Map Act that are required as a condition of a permit for a subdivision have the 21-year rule.
Not to belabor this issue, but I would be interested only in kind of seeing what is being proposed. I'm very comfortable with that coming back to us as a planning staff update, and from that information,
Madam Chair, I think it should be come back as an agendized item. If you want to discuss it under staff updates, it should be listed there.
We'll specifically list it on the agenda.
And will that be, could that make it on the next agenda, Mr. Hogue, so that we would have the maximum amount of time for any potential?
I don't know. This is the first I've heard about the issue. I need to talk to General Services, really see what the issue is, what the projects are.
Okay.
If I can report back at the, well.
Why don't you report back at the next meeting what you've learned?
The agenda's already out. It's already been prepared for the next meeting. So probably the meeting after that, we'll put it on the agenda.
There's methods for adding items to the agenda, and I would suggest that you utilize
those. I just
those.
Can't commit because I don't know what the scope of the problem is and what it would take to bring it into shape. We could do a core agenda, but I would prefer to just schedule it for the meeting after, which would be July, second meeting in July.
I'm just trying to get us the maximum amount of flexibility if indeed there is a will to agendize this as a for action by the hearing, by the Planning Commission, before the board hears it.
Well,
that's my concern.
If it's your commission's desire to actually discuss it in depth, then your only opportunity is to add it to that special meeting on August 30th.
That's not going to be a meeting, though. And it is it is going to be an advertised meeting, but it's an educational forum that we'll be attending. Is that correct? Yes.
To be honest with you, I was not present when this idea for the meeting on August 30th came up, and it involves a different division, so I really couldn't tell you what the idea is.
I believe that we all indicated an interest in going to, and it was actually a two-day conference, as I remember.
Oh, no, that's April. That's August 23rd.
We're talking two separate things here.
Oh, pardon me.
Two separate things.
And we're going to have a real meeting, but was to take this long-range planning item, and I presume if we should have some problems, we could push it off to that meeting. And
why don't you bring it back to us on July 28th? July 28th. 26th. And we will still have, what is
July
it?
26th.
July 26th, and that will allow us an opportunity to discuss it if we think we need to.
And then if you want to consider adding it to your agenda on August 30th. You can decide at that time.
That work for everybody? Okay. Thank you. Nothing further? I think not.
I'll take this opportunity to compliment planning staff and they presented a smart growth Mr. Chuck Stevenson did at the Templeton Area Advisory Group meeting and was very well received. Well done.
Good job. Okay.
And Nancy Orton was there to tie it into the obesity task force.
Good. Good.
Connecting the dots.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is our consent agenda. It is the Planning Commission minutes of May 10th and May 24th. Does anyone in the audience wish to speak on this, on these two items? Seeing no one, we'll bring it back to the commission.
Move approval, consent agenda.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion's approved.
Look at that.
Would the secretary please introduce item number one? And just before we do, I was asked to remind us all that if we've had ex parte communications on any of these items, to try and state them after the item's been introduced. Thank you.
Hearing to consider a request by Molly Lynn Thickham for a vesting tentative tract map, tract 2675, and conditional use permit in the San Luis Obispo planning area, county file number SUB2004-00402, supervisorial district 3, Stephanie Fuse, project manager.
Good morning, chairperson, members of the commission. Stephanie Fuse, project manager. The applicant has requested that this project be continued off calendar because they are redesigning the project from a 5-lot tract to a 4-lot parcel map.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of staff?
If it's going to be a parcel map, does that mean it's going to go to the subdivision review board then?
Right. Okay. Yes.
The secretary, please introduce item number two.
Hearing to consider a request by Woodlands Ventures, LLC, for a conditional use permit, county file number DRC2006-00132, supervisorial district 4, Jay Johnson, project manager.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the commission, Jay Johnson, planning staff. On the screen is the phasing map for the Woodlands. This is, project is a interesting twist on the Phase 1B golf course. It was approved as a 9-hole golf course, and they are seeking it to become a 12-hole golf course, which is interesting. But as we work through it, I think everything turns out well. On the screen is the concept plan from the Woodlands specific plan, and if you were to take the time to count the golf holes on this picture, you would count 45. But the specific plan doesn't limit the number of golf holes, and that's fair enough when you look at what it does address. So it doesn't limit the number of golf holes, but it does allocate approximate number of acres towards all golf facilities on the project, the village as it builds out. So there will be 300 acres more or less for all three courses and the driving range. And then thirdly, and most importantly in our estimation, is that Table 5 in the specific plan through the EIR limits the water demand to a certain level, 687.5 acre feet per year. And so regardless of the lack of difference between the two proposals, the 9 or 12 holes, ultimately the two important factors are the 300 acres and the amount of water to be used. So when we look at this specific proposal, staff's concerns were really on four items. Would the amount of acreage going towards this use change? That will remain the same, 56.59 acres. The same lots that were subdivided will be used for this. Would the water consumption be more with this? That was our first concern. Well, the analysis on the grass is when you decrease fairways and increase the areas that are between the holes, commonly referred to as secondary rough, the actual water will go down somewhat, not to a point where we would go into a great deal of depth analysis either way. At this point where the project is, and it just treat it as an equal to situation. Then another small item that we were somewhat concerned about was, okay, 12 holes, will there be more activity? Will there be more start times? Will that possibly impact traffic to some level or other things that are activity related? And the way the golf course will operate, they will still start people on the same increments. So throughout the day, the amount of activity on the course will be the same. And then lastly, our concern was over drainage. The mass grading that was approved with the Phase 1B project that is mostly completed now, and the drainage calculations won't be affected by that. And the drainage patterns on the course and the areas on the project that allow percolation will still be totally effective to how we originally had hoped. So the drainage won't significantly change either. Really what I get out of this by talking to the applicant, I'll let them explain to this more, is that it provides a short course for children and people that want to work on a particular aspect of their short game. I don't golf. I understand it somewhat, but that's the point. So our conclusion is that although the number of holes goes up, the specific plan doesn't prohibit that, and the issues of concern are equal to at worst in this case. So our recommendation is that you find it consistent with the specific plan and based on the findings and conditions in your staff report. I tried to focus the conditions on the number of holes. All the remaining conditions from the major development plan will remain in force as previously approved. That concludes my staff report, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
Questions?
I have one question. Mr. Johnson, how do we, how's the county monitoring the water use that we've set the limit on?
Actually, on the Woodlands, we monitor it very closely. We have well reports coming in, and they actually monitor several, and they could tell you the number of wells around the project that we get reports on. And then we also take when phase 2A and 2B come in, we have the ability to take a real close.
And would the applicant or the applicant's representative care to address the commission? Please come down to the podium, and when you've finished your presentation, if you can turn in a white slip in the back for us, we'd appreciate it. And I would just remind you, you have a little more than 3 minutes, but if you can kind of keep your you don't have to hurry too much.
Good morning. I'm Dan Garson with Woodlands. I'm a project manager for the golf course in particular. And if you have any questions, I'd just be glad to answer them.
All right. Are there questions?
Did you have a question, Commissioner Rose?
No, I don't.
The question that was asked earlier about the how the water use is monitored. Are there wells that are dedicated to the golf course?
Yes, ma'am. There are actually four wells on property. One, referred to as the Highway 1 well, is dedicated to golf use.
Okay. And that's the one well that's going to be providing the entirety of the water for this course as well?
It currently provides all water for golf courses.
Okay. And your estimated yield of that well is adequate, in your opinion, to provide enough water for the revised design here?
Oh, certainly. Yes, ma'am. And you realize we will take on effluent water as more becomes available.
That's a good thing.
Yes.
All right. Any other questions?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but as I recall, eventually when the whole project is up and running, the golf courses will get almost all of their water as effluent from the sewage treatment plant. Am I correct there?
That's correct.
All right. Thank you. I don't think we have any other questions at this time. Is there anyone else that cares to address the commission on this item? I have one speaker slip from Eric Greening.
Yes, I am Eric Greening, and I appreciate the assertion that this doesn't actually represent a change in the water use, but I do need to raise something I heard earlier this week that may be a changed circumstance since the staff report was written, and so I guess it's sort of a legal question in terms of whether this in any way changes the environment in which you're making the decision. Earlier this week, the Board of Supervisors certified a level of severity 3 for the area that includes the woodlands. It had previously recommended a level of severity 3. It has now certified a level of severity 3. As I say, I'm not sure of the implications of this, but I figure since I was there when it happened, it may be news to other people in this room, so I thought I would share that news, and if it makes any difference relative to your decision, you now know it. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Any further speakers to address us on this item? Seeing none, I will bring it back to the commission. Would planning staff care to address the level of service 3 that's certified in this and its relationship to this project?
I'd be glad to. Actually, it's a very good point that Mr. Greening brought up. And the 3 points. The first one is in the analysis for making that determination. The woodlands build out is part of that assumption. And since that approval, since the EIR in 1998 was certified by the board. All the efforts by the Napomo Services District and other water analysis happening in South County folds the build-out of woodlands from that EIR analysis into their analyses. The second thing, and this is more of a legal matter, is that the woodlands is a vested tentative map, and it would be challenging to place new rules such as that may happen through the Level 3 determination onto the woodlands. And thirdly, and probably most importantly from an environmental standpoint, is the woodlands does have an extensive list of conservation measures for it, of itself, that I think the rest of the South County is probably catching up to.
All right, thank you. Any other comments or questions? Moved action by the commission?
I just wanted to give council an opportunity to weigh in addition.
Well, this is a conditional use permit, so I don't think the vesting tentative map issue is really relevant. But the issue is that since the environmental impact report was certified, you have to determine whether there's been a significant change of circumstances or everything substantially the way it was. If you determine that there's a change of circumstances, that would require further environmental review, you would have to prepare a supplemental EIR. Otherwise, if everything is still the same, you can use what's been prepared already. Staff has recommended that what has been prepared is sufficient, and there's been no circumstances that would trigger. You've got to wrestle with the determination whether the environmental document is adequate. If it's adequate and everything is basically the same as it was before, you don't have to require further environmental review, or you could do an addendum. But if you determine that there's been a change of circumstances, you'd require a supplemental EIR.
Thank you.
But that's a staff recommendation and ultimately a decision for you to make.
Madam Chair, if I might, I'd like to tag on to that a bit. Certainly, as Mr. Orton indicated, that your commission could, looking at this project, could require additional environmental review or go as far as saying you're not in favor of adding the holes and deny the proposal. But I think to the question, would it eliminate the golf course? No, they have an entitlement for the 9 holes, and then if it doesn't, if this were denied, let's say, then they would proceed with the 9
they
holes.
Would fall back
so
to their homes. That's what I was.
Right.
That's what I was looking.
So in our estimation, that's not necessarily bettering the situation.
Right.
All right. Other questions? Move to action. Comments?
Ready for motion?
I am. If you all are.
Okay. I recommend to approve conditional use permit DRC2006-00132 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B.
Is there a second to that motion?
Sure. Second it.
Any further comments? Roll call, please.
Commissioner Milsko?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Chairperson Rappa?
Yes. Would our secretary please introduce item number 3?
Hearing to consider a request by Gary and Patricia Lyons for a variance coastal development permit in the Estero Planning Area, County File Number DRC2005-00240, Supervisorial District 2, Dan Nemechek, Project Manager.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners. Dan Nemechek with County Planning. My presentation today will include a brief overview of the project, orientation to the site, and conclude with staff's recommendations. The request before you today is for a variance coastal development permit to allow for the grading on slopes in excess of 30% for development of an approximately 4,502-square-foot, three-story single-family residence with an attached three-car garage. Additionally, disturbance of approximately 5,600 square feet on a, a 5,600 square foot parcel, and will include an additional 4,600 square feet of ground disturbance for slope stability, including retaining walls and county-required road improvements. Some background on this project. On February 27, 2003, the proposed project was approved by the Planning Commission. The applicant was granted a one-time extension extending the life of the permit through April 8, 2006. On May 31, 2006, variance CDP and building permits were deemed to have expired as a second-time extension had not been applied for. Hence, we are here again today. Here's a vicinity map showing location on Cerro Gordo Avenue. Land use category maps showing the RSF zoning, and it is within the geologic study area. It's an aerial image showing the site. It's back over there. Here are some photos. The one on the left is actually taken from the intersection of Shearer Avenue and Cerro Gordo, looking east up towards the building site. The building site is located beyond the houses on the right. Here's a closer version on the right showing the building site. Here's a larger image. Another shot of the site. And the one on the right is taken from the easternmost portion of the site looking west. Site plan. Elevations. And staff comments. No significant issues are associated with this project. No substantial project changes since the project was previously approved. Public Works has requested an update to the conditions of approval to clarify and reflect current requirements. They are as follows. Access improvements. Cerro Gordo Avenue constructed to a 20-foot paved section fronting the property and extending the existing approved portion of Cerro Gordo Avenue. All driveways shall be constructed in accordance with county public improvement standards. And drainage. The project shall comply with the requirements of the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, Phase 1 and or Phase 2 stormwater program. Any water released from some subsurface drains will be considered an illicit discharge under the Clean Water Act. Subsurface flows released on surface shall be retained on site. The county relied on the previous mitigated negative declaration that was approved February 27, 2003.
And can you explain the difference? I mean, between 28 feet from average natural grade versus a 28-foot restriction on the structure.
It's a little complicated.
Flat out.
It is.
I know it is, and I'm struggling to educate myself.
And I may defer to Matt Jansen. He may be a little bit more articulate on this matter than I am.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Matt Jansen. A height question, one of my favorites. Thank you. Average natural grade, in common sense language, is that if you take the exterior walls of a structure, whether they touch the ground or not, where they would touch the ground, and you average that point, the high and low of those two points, the centrex, if you will, the average is where we measure the maximum height from to the ridge line. So on a sloping lot like this, the north face of this house will have a much taller look to it, and the south face will have a much shorter look to it. Now, what we've tried to do is implement some of the considerations and recommendations of the...
Meaning the uphill, when you're talking about south and north, you mean that the uphill face will appear much taller.
This is the front, that would be the... and this would be the back.
Right. As you face it from the street, it'll appear taller. One of the things that we've tried to do to mitigate that look is implement the recommendations of the advisory council that to break up that face. Other height measurement points that we sometimes use, and it's specified either in the ordinance or planning area standards, is center line of street. For example, on Studio Drive down near the water, we would do 15 feet from center line. But most height measurements in the coastal zone are done average natural grade.
So in just layman's terms, can it be said in general that the steeper the slope, the higher the wall? Oh, I've just been handed a diagram.
I know. Look this way.
So it sounds to me like the diagram verifies what I was about to ask. The steeper the slope, the higher the actual height of the wall you end up with.
One of the wall faces could end up to be quite tall.
Quite tall.
And in Cambria and Cayucas, we do have some amazingly tall wall faces. The good news is that in Cayucas, we've implemented the advisory council's recommendations and limited the single lower story face of the first floor coming off the ground. I think it's 22 feet or 24 feet max. So we have to break it up. So we don't have a 40-foot tall face.
Yeah.
We're working on that.
What is the ground to top of the roof height of the highest wall of this structure?
That's a good question for the architect.
Okay. Because it looks big. I mean, it looks like a big kind of massive front there, and I'm just wondering how it's going to fit in with the houses on either side of it.
Perhaps Dan can go back to some of his photos of the existing structures, see how the front wall of these are broken up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
That's us implementing the recommendations of the advisory council.
For me, it would be helpful to know I wish I knew the proper planning terminology, but the total height of the face of those houses versus the total height of the front face of this house. That's where I'm looking for more information.
Okay, maybe the applicant can give you some insight into that. Are there other questions?
Did we see the drawing?
Oh, maybe staff wants to put this up on the overhead. It's quite simple and straightforward and illustrative, and picture tells 1,000 words.
And while they're trying to get that going, I have a question for Mr. Marshall. There were some additional changes to conditions for the road. So could you describe what's the road is now and what you would like it to be?
Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. Unfortunately, I made the drawing on the back side of my copy of the handout with the conditions. So can I borrow one from somebody? Well, I can answer the question. I think I can do it without the material, but maybe
you got a site plan or something would show the circulation in the area?
The short answer is the road has been improved to the same standard that we're recommending already by previous construction along the same street. And this one is beyond the end of where the improved road reaches now. So they have to construct to the same standard in front of their property and then a little ways back to connect to where it currently ends.
Little ways.
A lot.
I saw one of the pictures where they had, so we've got a nice street there right now, okay?
Right.
And we keep driving, and pretty soon we end up in dirt.
Right. I think it's just one or two lots beyond the end of what's improved now.
So this house is not going to...
Towards the camera perspective,
mm-hmm.
about one or two lots distance. It's a fairly minor extension of the existing improvement.
And at the end of that extension, what will exist?
Just a dead end like it exists now.
Okay. Oh, okay, that actually helps.
And all those lots eventually will come through and...
Right.
As the properties develop, the street will be developed.
As we continue to develop infrastructure for this antiquated subdivision, we're having each house build their piece of the subdivision improvements one piece at a time.
And the poor guy in the middle, if he was to... it's probably why he's not building today.
The question is that those properties which are not directly adjacent to this or directly adjacent to the existing paved street of Hacienda Drive have to somehow make up the difference. We're not going to just have street, no street, street, no street. Oh, well, that's a challenge for folks, I suppose. Any other comments or questions?
I actually, that overview prompted another question. I know that in Cambria's antiquated subdivision lot configuration, there are a variety of programs to try and buy up and retire some of those lots. Is there a similar effort going on in this area in Cayucas?
I apologize. Could you repeat the question?
Well,
I was trying to drive the room, and I couldn't do both.
I'm just wondering if there's any effort on the part of the county or any other nonprofit groups to purchase and retire any of these antiquated subdivision lots in this steep area of Cayucas, or if we're anticipating that we're full build-out is going to reflect all of those parcels that were on the delineated on the aerial?
The answer is yes. The Cayucas Land Conservancy actually has had some recent success in retiring several lots up on the top of this hillside, and they're working to continue to buy more of them. So we're hopeful that over time some of the really steep top lots will go away, and that'll be a nice preserved view shed there, at least towards the top of the hill.
Are those parcels steeper than this one?
Some are. Some are flatter when you get near the top. Mm-hmm. But as you know, because you've seen the maps, there are several hundred parcels here that we would rather not have, and we are constantly contacted by landowners trying to develop them, and they need an acre, so they need to try to accumulate others if they only have one or two.
Matt,
but the answer is yes.
Can you put the aerial back up on the screen and show the urban service line that's relevant in this discussion? The effort to retire lots is happening uphill of the bright red line in the picture.
To the right.
That's very
helpful
information.
Thank you. And so I don't believe there's any program to retire lots inside the urban line. So we can reasonably anticipate that all of the ones to the right of that line will develop and construct street and other infrastructure improvements as they do.
Okay.
Thank you. Right. Any other questions or comments?
Left.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
I heard something about an acre requirement. So that is for the parcels outside of the services line?
That's correct.
You referred to?
This parcel is not an acre in size.
No.
No. Hearing no other questions or comments from the commission, I would open this up to the public, and the applicant or his applicant's representative care to speak first. And I do want to remind folks, we need speaker slips after you've completed your presentation, preferably before people start their presentation.
And I'll remind that fellow, before he shows us that thing, we have to keep that, unless you can take a picture of it. And the secretary really doesn't want to keep it.
I'd be happy to provide you with pictures, but it wouldn't be at this minute. I'd have to get those to you.
Well, you could work that out with her.
Okay,
could you give us your name for the record, please?
John Pryor, architect for Mr. Lyons, who is here today, too. We have this model that we will provide you pictures of and coordinate keeping something for the record. I'll say that we're fine with the conditions that we've seen on the original staff report. I would like to address some of the questions that have been brought up. You asked about the height of the neighboring buildings. I can't tell you exactly what height those are, but they were developed to the same standard, and the slope is relatively the same there. So what you're seeing on some of those projects is identical height to ours, because every one of these garages has to come in off of the street at a maximum slope, and we're trying to mitigate the foundation wall heights. So from the ground floor to the ridge height is likely very similar, and if they don't build as deep as the full lot, they might have a lesser height. It has the extra wide lot. It allows for a lot more of that to happen and have pleasant spaces inside. So it's certainly not a blank wall, and they're very happy with it when we presented it to them. So I think we've dealt with that issue in a very attractive way, as opposed to some even that are on that street already. The one thing I do want to bring up, you have an added condition for the drainage to be retained on site. And as I understand it, it's a kind of a new element, and it's rather in the wording that I see there strict, and yet it hasn't been something that has been fully explored. So what I would like to suggest is, as it's up there on the screen now, that we take that wording and somehow modify it with or to the satisfaction of the Public Works Department, because in my understanding of it, and like I say, I'm not an engineer for this kind of thing, but talking with the engineer, would like to have a little bit of flexibility in where this can go. So I don't know if that's something you want to go into in detail. We don't have anyone to speak to the point. We just heard about it this morning. So,
I would, as I read this language, it looks like they want you to comply with some law, and how could we get out from under complying with that law?
Do you want to answer it now, or do you want to bring that back?
You're the boss. Whatever you want. But I want it answered.
Okay. We'll discuss that when we close the public comment.
If I could comment on that, it just seems that this is a much more restrictive statement to be placed in conditions to say it shall be done this way. There may be other ways to deal with it. And I wanted to leave that as an option to work with and still meet the law.
Okay.
And Mr. Lyons is here if you need anything, and I'm here for questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions of the applicant's representative?
It seems the last time we heard this, there were some issues about landslide hazards and stuff, and I know we have a lot of CEGs and RCGs and CEs that are going to address all these. Or am I confusing this with another project?
No. Any of these hillside lots, and I've been dealing with a number of them for some time now, progressively we have done much more rigorous reviews of the reporting and peer review of the reporting of the geologies and of the landslides. Mr. Lyons has gone through the mill in several different ways that have been kind of new to the process. We have been conditioned heavily. I think what you have for a lot of projects in the last 2 or 3 years here are a real solid state of conditions that monitor as you go through the project, what's the condition when you dig it out, as well as the studies that determine whether or not landslide is an issue. On this particular, it was not. I think you've covered the base with the conditions you have. I don't know that there's anything new to be discovered, but it's heavily conditioned. So,
well, was there a landslide on the property or a slump?
No. In fact, there was a concern brought up, but it was not relative to this project. It actually was stated to be several lots away and not even aimed at ours. So it was looked at in the reports. I don't know if anybody can address that.
Commissioner Rose, I think I know the one you're remembering, and that's down the street a bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Any further questions of the applicant's representative? Seeing none, thank you. Take a picture of your model and leave it for their secretary, please. Is there anyone else that wishes to address the commission on this item? Seeing none, I will bring it back to the commission. And Commissioner Rose, you had a question on the drainage.
Well, right. Condition. He was concerned about that, but I couldn't see the concern. And maybe Richard was leaning forward. It looks like it's some law that you're just trying to make sure we comply with, or he complies with.
Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. I'd like to ask assistance in a couple ways. If we could put the condition language back on the screen. And John Pryor, if you wouldn't mind, could you put the model back up on the podium where we could see it? What's left? It looks in good shape. I know it's sturdy enough. Thank you. What this has to do with is a law that's already been in existence for some time, but we very, very recently got an increased and fairly different understanding of one detail of its provisions. And John's right, it's different than what we've made people do before this, but the rule was there all along. We didn't understand it right, and now we do. Now that we do, we're telling this applicant and everybody starting now, they're going to have to comply with what this law really said all along. So you're right. We're just telling them they have to obey this other federal law. What it's all about is, notice around the uphill side of the model, the dark surfaces indicate retaining walls to be constructed to create. We don't really have a mechanism for monitoring that ongoing maintenance of that. the other way to deal with it is to have it not happen. One way of doing that is that it can be released from the retaining wall drain into some sort of retention on site to just recharge back to groundwater. Another way would be to design the retaining wall in such a way that it doesn't have to use the subsurface drain in the first place. So all of those things, I think they can happen with the condition the way it's written, because if we treat the water, well, we're not recommending pursuing the treatment option. It doesn't seem reasonable. If we come up with a way to not have a subsurface drain, then there won't be any subsurface flows released on surface, so they don't have to be retained. But I am comfortable with adding a provision for approval by Public Works, and I recommend the following. Right at the beginning of the final sentence on the screen, by the way, I suggest that this be inserted between your conditions 9 and 10, which would be on page 312. And I mention that because I want to refer to it in this way. At the beginning of this final sentence on the screen right now, it would say, the drainage plan required by condition 9 shall demonstrate to the satisfaction of Public Works that subsurface flows released on surface shall be retained on site. And that would be my suggestion. The conditions regarding access and improvements, I think, fit best between number 30 and 31 in the conditions. That places them in the section that says it has to be completed prior to occupancy.
Thank you. Are there any questions of Mr. Marshall? Any questions on the added language?
Just one on this subsurface flow business. Now, you're not recommending that they treat it, but if it turns out in their economic analysis of things that that is the more reasonable way to go, they can do that.
If they can persuade me that it works simply and with virtually no ongoing care required over time, I would be comfortable with approving that as substantially complying with this condition.
Okay.
I'm just going to weigh in and say I hope you are not persuaded.
Really noted.
Because the idea of treating the water on site and then allowing it, discharging it basically onto the side of the road where it's going to continually run down the hill, it's going to pick up pollutants as it makes its way to the ocean, and it's going to be a nuisance for neighbors and pedestrians and, to just have this constant drainage down the street. I don't think that's in the best interest of the overall planning of the neighborhood.
And I appreciate those concerns, and I'll add that in those ways it would be just like everything else that got built before this rule. So it's not unusual. It's not really a big problem, but it's our recently refreshed understanding of what this law is really all about.
I think it's great that you have a heightened awareness of the application of this, and I would just, urge you to stick to your heightened awareness of it, because I think the county's on the right track there.
All right. Any other questions, comments, move to action by the commission?
Well, just a clarification, because I'm not totally clear. The new condition just refers to the subsurface drainage or runoff.
That's
as
correct.
Opposed to surface runoff.
Right. The idea is that rain falling on the surface and then just running through this site and continuing on the surface already exists and has to comply with the rules of this law for sites greater than 1 acre, I might add, and this is not. So this isn't really officially subject to those rules, but our standard application of erosion control measures and stuff based on county ordinance accomplished the same objectives. The distinction here is that water that's currently subsurface and staying subsurface is being redirected with the design of the retaining wall drain to the surface where it didn't used to be. That makes it a discharge that has to be dealt with under these rules.
And the concern is that maybe in the ground there's some yucky stuff that would now be dribbling down the street.
Right, and apparently yuckier than the street itself already is.
Right. Okay, now back to the surface flow. What about the roof drains? Where do they go?
Well, that's already covered by standard application of ordinance and the other conditions that are already before you. They have to be captured and handled. I don't remember the exact specifics of what this application proposes, but that's a function of basic drainage plan review that we already handle.
But how much retained on site then, and how much of that just
that doesn't
out
have to be retained? It's allowed to be released because it's already on the surface.
Okay. Any other questions, comments, or motion to dispose of this item?
Well, first of all, before I move approval here, I would just like to compliment the architect on the design of this structure. I'm not a fan of building on the steeper slopes, but this design does look much better to me than what we see existing on the street and much in the area. So I think it looks very nice, and so I am pleased to move to approve and consider and rely on the mitigated negative declaration that was previously.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Commissioner Melska?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Chairperson Rappa?
Yes. And with that, we will take a 15-minute break. Return at 10:15.
$30-$40 there.
All right, it is 10:15, and we will resume our meeting. Would the clerk please introduce item number 4? The secretary, I'm sorry.
Hearing to consider a request by Dina Del Kenner, Linda Fields, and Heidi Patton for a tentative tract map planned unit development and conditional use permit. The site is in the Salinas River Planning Area. County file number SUV 2005-00199, Supervisorial District 1, Elizabeth Cavanaugh, Project Manager.
1 minute before you introduce or start the item. Ex parte?
Indeed. Thank you. I had a conversation with the applicant's agent and a couple of the applicants, and we discussed some things, which I'm sure will come up today, and if they don't, I'll ask the questions.
Madam Chair, I also have an ex parte, quasi-ex parte. I exchanged voicemail messages with the applicant's agent, Pamela Giardini, and I was unfortunately unable to make a visit to the site per their invitation, but I did tell her that I was had some questions about the sound mitigation. She left me a voicemail with detailing what the sound mitigation was, and I'm sure that will be discussed in the meeting today as well.
I also met with the applicant's representative.
I also had a phone conversation.
And I also had a phone conversation.
So we're all on the up and up.
She's doing her job.
All right. Could we have the staff presentation, please?
Good morning, Chairperson Rappa, Planning Commissioners. I'm Elizabeth Cavanaugh, your county planning staff on this project. This project is a plan unit development in the community of San Miguel. It's a conditional use permit and a tract. It's 1.6 acres to be subdivided into 22 residential lots and an open space lot. The residential lots are going to range from 1,080 square feet to 2,107 square feet. They'll accommodate houses that range in size from 605 square feet to 1,091 square feet, And there will be a 2,500 square foot common open space area within this development. Staff's going to recommend that you approve this project and approve the negative declaration and approve the project based on the findings and the conditions and the condition change that were handed out today. I'll detail those changes a little bit later in my presentation for you. Our project is 1.6 acres in San Miguel. It's zoned residential multifamily. It's served by community services, and it's located near downtown. Here's an overhead picture of the site. As you see, it's an irregular shaped site. I've been calling it a T-shape. With this lot, this is the end of the multifamily lot with adjacent commercial service, although that's a residence on the lot. The Salinas River is here. The railroad is here. Mission Street is off the picture. The site itself is level. It's mostly grass, and it's located along paved public streets. This is a picture of a site plan. There has been a change in the site plan, which I handed out to you just this morning. And I've circled the areas that have changed. These three units here have gone from two garages to one car garage and a carport. Same with this one. And again, this one also went from two car garage to one car with a carport, one car garage with a carport, and this one down here also. This site map is giving us 19 units per acre density, a variety of housing types, one, two, and three bedrooms, a common space parcel here in a centrally located position, and it an open space lot, the streets, and guest parking. Here's an elevation, or slice of elevations, of what the project would look like. Here's some elevations on the proposed units. I've placed conditions to dress them up a little bit and provide a variety of unit facades. There's a couple unresolved issues with this project. One of them is the staff is recommending that we use 5-foot fencing on the interior of the project. This is around the patios and that area, and the applicant's going to request 6-foot fencing. We feel strongly that the 5-foot fencing is enough to provide privacy. You really have to be close to the edge to look over into your neighbor's yard, and it prevents that fort-like boxed-in feeling that these small yards have if they're boxed in beyond your line of sight. And the other issue that is unresolved is a textured pedestrian pathways. We're recommending that, and the applicant is wanting to limit their textured or colored, actually, is the condition. They're wanting to limit that to the areas you see on the site plan, which are dark-colored, mostly the crosswalk, I think you'll see. There's a little square crosswalk by the common open space. I conditioned it so that the sidewalks and pathways are also that same texture, whatever they select or color. I allowed this here just to show you how I thought the fencing and the walkways would play in. Here's the textured walkways that are colored that they're proposing. And I'm simply saying extend that along to the sidewalks so that it's very obvious these are walkways versus curbs or streets. This is a rolled curb, so it's a nice transition from walkway to street, where the traditional curb that usually serves that purpose. The fencing, these are the backyards. We're saying these fence lines need to be 5-foot. And we're, again, for the reason to present that fort-like feeling where you're in a tunnel in these small yards. A couple of changes in the condition that I wanted to go through with you. Condition number 16 on the first set of conditions.
The page number, please.
They're on the new handout without the page numbers. Excuse me. Condition 16 talks about, it crosses out the the date and person who prepared the report to be noted on the map. That was something the applicant requested, and we were able to accommodate that. Condition 25, and this is the forethought of most of the change of conditions, is around the fencing. Standard Kit Fox mitigation requires that there be a 1 foot off the ground clearance for Kit Fox. When the applicant approached me and stated that they didn't think that was necessary or appropriate and possibly dangerous, and how could people have pets and kids and that kind of stuff, I approached our county biologist on this issue, and she determined that the whole site is lost to Kit Fox. It's not Kit Fox habitat anymore, and that the fencing was really better served for bigger lots where we're you know, say a 5-acre lot, and we're fencing off a half acre where we could allow the Kit Fox to transport in and out of that fenced area, and that wasn't really an appropriate standard for this project. Staff agreed, and there's many deletions throughout the change of conditions that reflect that. 32 on the change of condition is simply allowing them to landscape after construction as it's written. It's, you know, do it after the final map, which really is an appropriate time for landscaping. 33, you'll see a change at the bottom of the page. Again, that's reflecting the Kit Fox change of the amount. The whole site was not Kit Fox habitat originally, to be determined by Department of Fish and Game. That was because the site currently has a couple of houses and some paved areas on it. And so that change reflects the actual impact to Kit Fox habitat. 39, again, is striking out the Kit Fox fencing. 49 was deemed unnecessary, essentially because it repeats what was commented in conditions 3 through 6 and 11 through 14. I've just been informed that condition 50 is also unnecessary because the project was accepted after the time, and that's why I put them in your staff report.
Would you tell us the page number of those comments so we can look at those fast?
4-5.
Your interpretation. 4-5. 4-5. Thanks.
And before you get into it, I noticed in the last sentences they request planning require night sky lighting, which I presume you meant dark. They want to keep a dark sky, right?
Yes. Finally, this project has been in the works for about a year. We've had several redesigns, about six that I can tally up. Staff and the applicant worked very closely on redesigning this project. The odd shape of it has presented a challenge for both staff and the applicant, and I think that we've reached a compromise here that is presented before you. And I'm available for any questions you may have. Thank you.
Questions?
Just to continue on the advisory group comment, I talked to Cliff Smith, who attended the advisory group, and he more or less agreed with your assessment of things the community was unsure about, the small lots and the small houses, whether they would sell or not. And that's one of the conversations I had with the applicant, and it was based on conversations that we've had here often. When we see these planned developments, they're all a bunch of 2-3-bedroom things, kind of. And we've asked, and I've been one of those who's asked, that we see a variety of 1-bedroom, 2-bedroom, 3-bedroom, so that, you know, granny has got a place to live, if, as well as young families or young singles. And I like that component of this design, that it does have that. Recognizing the advisory group may not be there yet, and I hope this project will be built. It'll look nice. It'll be successful, and there'll be a demand for those 1-bedroom units.
Personally, I think they're going to go like hotcakes. Really, really pleased to see the mix of units and the occasional attached walls. I was going to say this in my comments, but since...
Well, we'll wait for your comments then. Are there other questions?
Yeah, I did want to get a little more description on the open space, what amenities, what the common open space there that you've got on the screen, what will be there?
The applicant is proposing a sandbox and a garden and a picnic bench, and staff has conditioned that there be a play structure and some kind of playground equipment on that site.
And this will all be maintained by the Homeowners Association?
Yes, sir.
And so whatever gets built originally, the Homeowners Association will have the right to take out the sandbox and put in a swing set, or take out the swing set and put in a sandbox, or whatever they want to do, right?
Yes. Once it's in the hands of the Homeowners Association, that's their land.
Okay. I just had a question. The Advisory Council comments are referred to here, and they request planning require night sky lighting. That's lighting to protect the night sky.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, checking.
Questions? I had a couple questions on relative to the noise on page 490. This site is located pretty close to the railroad tracks. And the NIG deck says that as proposed, lots 1 through 3 would be exposed to unacceptable levels of both interior and exterior noise, which is a potentially significant impact. The staff mitigation for that, as best I can make out, is to configure those parcels in such a way that the yard areas or the open space areas are closer to the... And I'm just not entirely convinced that, given the small size of the yards, just having a couple extra feet of distance essentially from the railroad is going to be an effective mitigation factor. And I'm wondering if there are any other design features that could be considered, at least for those residences, to help reduce the noise impacts. I mean, I know that there's triple glazed glass now, for instance. And
could we just see the site plan with this so we can see what's been proposed?
Triple.
Oh.
Triple glazed.
Thanks.
I can tell you that the open space areas of these projects are set behind the buildings, and the buildings act as, the private space for lots 1, 2, and 3 are set behind the buildings, and the buildings act as a fabulous noise barrier.
Well, the buildings are the houses.
Right.
Where the people are.
There's different standards for indoor noise.
Excuse me? The building...
which I don't even see page numbers on. What's the number, the new condition number?
51.
Okay. It's about in the middle of, or less than in the middle. Here it is, sir. Got it. This is condition
okay, traffic
51.
And circulation.
That's an exhibit. D is a dog.
I can clarify this. It's on the old staff report, the old condition, page 417, 51D, under the additional map sheet.
All right, are there any other questions of staff?
As I'm quickly reading through this, this is saying double glazed windows.
I may have given you the wrong number.
No, I'm reading the correct condition.
Yes.
D small V calls for double glazed windows. I'm just wondering if we have any experience with triple glazed windows.
I do not. However, we have a noise study that these recommendations came straight out of from an acoustical analysis.
Okay.
Other comments or questions for staff?
To discuss that a little bit more, so these are what are required. Does anybody go measure it when it's done to see if it's as part of the final inspection process, or do the final inspectors make sure that they've met this stuff?
Right. The inspectors will have these requirements listed on the building permit, so they'll make sure that it's this particular type of window with an STC rating of 37 or better as determined by accredited acoustical laboratory. I'm not a noise expert. I have no idea what that means, but I'm assuming it's important, and it was what was recommended by the noise expert. He uses an example that meets this requirement is Milgard quiet line windows with laminated glass as an example of something that meets these requirements.
And if the applicant chose to buy triple glaze, which in fact met that standard, then they
as
meet.
As long as it was fully gasketed, did, with an STC rating of 37 or better.
Yes, indeed.
I don't know how to say
gasketed.
Okay, Mr. Orton, did you have a comment?
Yes, I had a question. As I understand it, there are two common area parcels. Is that correct? When I look at Exhibit B, Condition 1, it says 22 residential lots plus a 20,000 square foot common area parcel and a 2,500 square foot. Is that correct, Elizabeth? There are two. On page 437 is the tentative map. Mm-hmm. Can you show me where the smaller parcel is? I see lot 23, but I don't see lot 24.
Mr. Orton, the common area includes the common open space area for recreation, the street, the parking. So the bigger number includes all of those and the 2,500 square foot common open space parcel.
Okay.
So it's all in one parcel, although there's an area designated for the common open space for recreation.
Okay, so when you go back to condition number one, where it describes the project, it says 22 residential lots and a 20,000 square foot common area parcel and a 2,500 square foot common.
It says that includes two private streets, seven guest parking spaces, landscaping, and a 2,500. So the 20,000 includes the 2,500 square foot common parcel.
Okay, so there's only one common parcel then.
Correct.
Okay. And the other comment I had was, since two of the conditions are deleted, you need to renumber, of course. But I was just confused about the common lots there. Thank you.
Well, the wording does seem a little confusing. And would just adding a comma and which or something make that more clear to you?
Well, let me look at it during testimony.
Other questions of staff? I have a question. You use the term dress up. Can you give me an idea of what staff is suggesting the applicant do?
Well, Cami looks for the actual condition. I'm asking that it provide four or five different facade plans that include different materials and different shaped windows and that kind of stuff to create interesting buildings along this private road.
Did you have a discussion with the applicant as to what kind of cost increases this would come out to be?
No, I did not.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
Beanie and Steve Sankey, and we are the agents for the applicant.
I think it's...
And what I have handed out to you, since there was some mix-up in the site plan and the staff report, on your second page you have a colored copy of the site plan that Elizabeth did put up, so it's a little bit easier to read. And on the front page there you have architectural elevations that also will come up in the PowerPoint presentation, showing you the kind of textures that we're proposing and the kind of siding that we're proposing to add variety to the units. The 8.5 by 11 handout that I handed you has to do with conditions of approval and staff report recommendations or corrections to and requests for modifications to the conditions of approval. And we'll go over those at the end of my presentation if the commission so desires. What I have for you is about a 6 or 7 minute, just a basic PowerPoint presentation so you can see the things in a better view, and then talk to you about the staff report and here to answer any of your questions. So with that, I'll begin my presentation. Elizabeth did a really good job of going over the project location, and so here it is again. You have N Street lying to the west, 12th Street lying to the south. You have a commercial service zoning to the north that's occupied by residents, the senior center to the east, you have a vacant lot and then a duplex and an apartment complex to the south. Again, the railroad tracks are to the west of this property on the other side of North Street. May I have the next slide, please? Here? Oh, okay. Elizabeth went over these, so I'll go over them very quickly. We're obviously within San Miguel's urban reserve line. This is residential multifamily zoning. It is an infill project. We are within walking distance to urban services. We are served by community water and sewer. The site is nearly level, and there's no native trees on site. Now we're to the tough part here, the design criteria. When we went to design this plan, we had been paying attention to what the planning commissioners had been asking for and speaking to in previous projects that had come to you that were zoned residential multifamily and how they were developed. And we deduced with some help that basically you were looking at four things, one being density. You were trying to keep density on sites as high as possible to accommodate the residential multifamily zoning, that you wanted a variety of units, such as 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms, that you wanted an active play area that was not out towards the street, but more on the interior of the site that actually acted as a play area, and that you wanted facade articulation. So working with those designs criteria, we also had the San Miguel design guidelines. And they're reflected in your staff report. They speak about building articulation, layout, many of the things that you've talked about. We also had to deal with the land use ordinance. Those requirements were fairly easy to meet in the land use requirement ordinance. The planning department had requirements, too, where we did have some compromises and some discussions were as far as the tandem parking. One of our first designs that came in had almost complete tandem parking. Also, we had a straight road coming into the design. Both of those things allowed a higher density on the site. We were at 24 or 25 units, but the planning department had asked an out-of-state consultant to review the site plan. He came up with the curved road and took away some of the tandem parking. So that was a work in progress, and so we've come to a site design now that I think the planning department helped us out a lot out in the facade, building facade articulations in bringing us up there, and then we kind of compromised on the tandem parking and the roadway. And we also had my client's desires, which were to really try and keep the cost of these units down because they are in residential multifamily. We're trying to target workforce. I know nobody has an exact definition of that. But so that they didn't start out at $500,000. And so on the right side of the screen kind of gives you what we've ended up with here. We've ended up with 19 units per acre with a variety of the tandem parking and regular parking. We have given you 1, 2, and 3-bedroom units. We do have an active play area. We do have facade articulation. We have a variation of facade materials. Some of the units are common wall, and some of them stand single. We do have some tandem parking on site. I think it's about 45%. And with a removal of 2-car garages down to 1-car garage, then that kind of de-emphasizes the garage appearing on the interior street as being the prominent feature there. We did look at taking away some of the garages completely. The problem is that you like to store things and/or colored. And I'll come to that on my conditions of approval. I'll come back to that point. To give you an idea of where the units are located here, we have 3 1-bedroom units. Those are those units there. We have the 2-bedroom units are in yellow, and they're dispersed throughout the site. And the 3-bedroom units are then in the kind of olive green color there. And that's how they lay out on the site. This is what you have in front of you that shows the articulation on the buildings. As you can see, we have board, we have stucco, we have a variety of, I would also like to say, roof lines, hip lines here if you look at them. We have a variety of roofing material, a variety of colors for the siding, and also for fascia here and color combinations that can be used here. Also, some of the units have the availability to have an additional private outdoor space. space built on top of their garages as shown here that would have a wall dividing it here too. So that would give them additional outdoor space besides their private backyards.
On top of the garages would be some patio space. So but behind that facade, it's a flat roof? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Correct. And not on all the units, but on some of the units.
Okay.
Thank okay. Here's elevations facing the street so that you can see what, the, you know, kind of a unit here with the garage, the private fences here. Again, the two units put together with the private fence, how the street is broken up. And this is going out onto 12th Street here, and the interior look of the interior side here. And before I move on to our corrections on the conditions, I'd like to state here that we do have Planning Department recommendation for approval on this project. We have been issued a mitigating negative declaration. We do meet the design criteria in the San Miguel design guidelines. We've tried to meet the Planning Commission's criteria that you've expressed through the hearings and the Planning Department criteria, as well as trying to target workforce housing here. That kind of concludes my PowerPoint presentation, and I can either take questions now about the design, or do you want me to go ahead and move into my conditions of approval and what corrections I have there?
My preference would be that you complete your presentation but be available immediately after for questions.
Okay, great. On the next handout that I handed to you,
that's the modifications?
Yeah, modifications here. This was sent to planning staff a day or two ago, and then again last night I made some additional modifications. So most of them they've seen. There's a few that they haven't seen. The new graphics came out, and the bedroom units were off on the staff report. Those are just project descriptions that I wanted to clarify. On table page 4-3, the table proposed setbacks should be set by map. And that's really critical because should Elizabeth leave, and in 2 years when we're applying for the building permits on these, then it goes back to our track map. So there's no question on what's the backyard, front yard, side yard. So they're set by map, and that's allowed. I'm afraid that the dimensions in there may get confused over the next person who reviews them. So that's just a correction we'd like to that. I do have a copy of the advisory group comments. When we went before them, they were really supportive of it. They did speak to small lots, but it was in favor of this in being able to accommodate this kind of need in housing. And so I do have a copy of the minutes here if you want to see them. I'm going to skip over condition 9 for a moment and go on to, and condition 16 was corrected. Condition number 22 and a few of the other conditions that I'm going to be speaking to you about have to do with what we consider value engineering in this kind of development and value engineering on any type of site. A children's play structure, their planning staff is asking that it be shaded. When you build a shade structure to shade something like that, first of all, you have to be designed for wind lift because it's going to be a pole structure with a roofing on top of it. So you have to have a structural engineer involved. You have to have footings that are set in concrete. I live in North County. I have children who are 15 and 11, so I've lived there all my life. We just didn't go out. I mean, nobody goes out in North County when it's 105 outside and take their kids to a playground because you can't stand to be outside. The play structure would add shade from about 11 to 1 or 2, and the cost of it is quite high. And so we're asking that that condition be removed because no other play structures in North County that I know of have covers over them. And the cost then is just passed on to the purchasers of the property, and we're trying to, we all have to be textured. And there's a couple things. The texture concrete, there's no way to control the amount of divots in it. I've been involved in out on project sites when it's done, and so you have problems with people who are blind or wheelchairs making it over those divots then, because in a 4-foot wide sidewalk are the paths going to the house. So that becomes a problem. The other thing is that coloring it or texturing it, again, when we go to bring the concrete on site to place the rolled curbs on site, it would all come out of one batch, and we'd like to pour the rolled curbs and the sidewalks all together. When you have to color it or texture it, it means it's a different load that comes in, and when you there's a couple different ways. I'm boring you to death, but it's really important because these are added costs to this project. When you add color into the entire mix of the concrete, that's a mined mineral, and so it's not a sustainable resource, and you have to put that in there. When you add color when you're doing it on the surface and troweling it in, then both color applications do have to be sealed periodically almost every year in order to keep that color vibrant. And so, again, it's an added cost to the homeowners who eventually we're targeting to try to keep these costs low. And so we're trying to come to you and say, you know, for value of this, we would love to put the money and are putting money into the facades and into the play structure and into the landscaping. And these are things that are going to drive up the cost of the house that we think are a bit beyond necessary when we've got delineations there that, you know, do add interest and diversity to the project.
Could I just ask for a clarification? Mm-hmm. So you're accepting the textured surfaces for the crosswalks around the play areas, but the difference then between what you'd like to do and what staff is requesting is the sidewalk, that interior sidewalk?
Right, the interior sidewalk, which is this sidewalk here. Okay, and then as the conditions written, any kind of interior sidewalks that would go from the garages to the units. And so where we've got shown in burgundy, we've always proposed to have as textured or colored concrete. But we didn't want to have to carry it throughout, because if you go to pour the driveway out of regular concrete and then you have to bring a different cement truck in to then pour the sidewalks that are interior circulations, again, it's a different pour, a different truck coming, a different mix. So we're trying to just keep it all uniform to keep the costs down. My next comment has to do with number 25, which has to do with the fencing. Staff we worked it out with staff so that the fencings between the units do go all the way to the ground. Dealing with a 5-foot high fence, two issues there. I'm 5'7", I think, so that's about here, so I can see over. So I don't know if that's giving you privacy when you can see over a fence. But the other thing is your fencing typically comes in 6-foot strips. And so, and that's, I mean, that's how you buy it, right? So if you have to cut a foot off of every single board, that's 15% wastage. That 15% wastage then has to be manually cut, then piled, and then taken off site and driven and disposed of someplace. And we feel that a 6-foot high fence actually gives the privacy that you're trying to achieve in a courtyard and not create the wastage, because we're all talking about sustainability and keeping the what goes to the landfills out of the landfills. There's no use for that 1 foot that's being cut off. The other question we had was on transparent fencing. We have parking here, and so we were going to continue with a fence here, so that if you came in and parked at night here, there would be a solid fencing here so that it didn't shine into the side of this building here. There was also solid fencing around these units that are next to the playground, around all the units. I'm not positive where staff sees transparent fencing. We also had, I think it's by ordinance, we have to have solid fencing around the trash enclosures. If Planning Commission and staff is saying just a transparent fencing such as a post and rail along here and here to kind of keep the children in, we're all in favor of that. I wasn't positive where the transparent fencing was going, and we had specific requirements of why we wanted it here and around the trash enclosures so that and around the yards so that you kept that privacy, you didn't have lights coming in.
I missed you. Transparent fencing.
Well, let's ask our questions when the presentations. Staff can address what they mean by transparent. You told me to run the meeting, Bob.
But we're achieving a big pile here that's going
to... It's okay. We're used to piles.
I tried to lay them out so nicely for you. I did.
Trouble is, everyone's got different...
I did have one other thing that went through my head. In the staff report, it requires that the fences be set back 5 feet from all units. And there are 3 units where that can't be accommodated because it would interfere with their windows as they're placed in the buildings. And I have that, actually. If I can find it for you. Oh, I guess I didn't lay it out. Steve Sankey may know where it is. It has to do with 3 units that can't have the 5-foot setback because it would go right into their window. Do you remember?
Unit 3 up at the front of it?
Unit 3?
On the south side?
Here.
Lower?
Here.
The left?
Here.
Right. If someone is, we need to, I just repeat into the mic, that'd be great.
That was Steve Sankey talking about unit 3, number 3 here, that if the fence is set back 5 feet, then what it does is interfere with the window that's going to go there, so we could accommodate a 3-foot setback there, and there's 2 other units on site, too.
12th Street.
12th Street over here. So again, here. I hope I didn't overwhelm you too much. Okay, and now I'm available for any questions.
All right, Mr. Rose, you've been waiting to ask questions of the applicant.
I'm not going to ask any questions until we're... What we're going to have to do is we're going to have to sit down and come to consensus and bargain and so forth, and there's so many things here. I'd rather we completed the public testimony. There may be someone else wants to.
Okay,
that'd
be fine.
Get them all in, and then we're going to have to stay, well, where are we going with each one of these little issues?
All right, thank you very much. Is there anyone else who cares to address the commission on this item? I would suggest you keep yourself available for answers if there are any.
Madam Chair, I did just have a question of Ms. Giardini for clarification with relation to number 22, the shaded children's structure.
Mm-hmm.
The handout you gave us said please delete. You're just talking about deleting shaded. You're not talking about deleting the requirement to provide a children's play structure. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Just the shaded,
okay. Structure part.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, just for clarification, the way that that condition reads is that it's a shaded children's play area that includes children's play structure and appropriate ground cover. The shading could be trees.
Right. That was the note that I had written to myself. Yeah.
Is there anyone else who wishes to address the commission on this item? Seeing no one, we will bring it back to the commission.
Madam Chair, if I could, before the commission deliberates, I'd like to at least give some staff responses to the issues that were raised by the applicant's representative. They raised concern about the colored and or textured pathways and the texture being a problem for blind people or people with sight problems. It's an and or. It's written and or. And our concept is that we really want to clarify that those places inside as shown on the site plan, those pathways, and it's only the sidewalks, it's not the pathways to the individual units. Those sidewalks are places for pedestrians. You're going to have interactions there as cars are backing out. It's really just a way to say these are spots for pedestrians. And it could be just color. It doesn't have to be texture if that creates an issue or a problem. I raised the issue that the shade could be trees. That would not be a problem at all, and in fact, we would rather see trees than a structure, actually, anyway. And if there's needing to be clarification on that particular condition, we could specifically say this could be landscaping or this could be trees or something like that. The proposed setbacks that the applicant's representative wanted the table modified in the staff report, yes, the setbacks are set by MAP, but we need to know what those setbacks are that are set by MAP. That's part of the decision that you make today. So those don't change somehow between now and final MAP, and that was really the purpose of putting them in the table so that at at the time of building permit, we can actually go in and make sure that the setbacks that were approved by your planning commission are the setbacks that are being maintained. So we would rather leave the numbers in. Yes, in fact, they are being set by the map, but we need to know the specific numbers. As for the fencing, Elizabeth can show what the idea with the transparent, which is really a wrought iron or a split rail or something that doesn't wall something off. It's visually you can see through. The idea was that that would be simply around the common area here. So if they are going to fence that off, that it not be fenced off visually, saying, and could be solid wood, 5 or 6 feet tall, whatever your commission agrees to. And I think
there was some question then about fencing around trash receptacles that some interpretation would be it should be solid, and
it
sounded like the application
required to be solid fencing.
Okay, so there's no conflict there.
Right. Thanks.
What about the 6-foot fencing?
6 foot versus 5 feet. We've used 5 feet in past projects on these small lot projects, again, in an attempt to try and avoid that walled-in feeling in these very small areas. I actually lived in a condominium, and our fencing was lower and included some wrought iron, and I never felt it to be a problem. Now, granted, I'm short, but Mr. Hogue is 6'3", and he can look over a 6-foot fence. So I think that's a decision that your commission has before you today. We would recommend it because we feel that it's a nice solution. When you sit down at a patio table, you still have all the privacy, but it still doesn't, or it doesn't create that walled-in feeling that you can get with the higher fencing.
Don't they make 10-foot boards that could be cut in half?
You know, it depends on how you do the fencing. Yeah, a lot of the where you buy the fencing and the big chunks, that's all 6'6".
And it's pretty ugly.
It is.
And expensive.
I would have to agree with you there. But, yeah, you could buy individual boards at 10 feet and cut them down. It is possible.
What about a compromise with the 5-foot solid and then some lattice or something that's not completely solid for the extra foot? Would that be something commissioners might be comfortable with? That might be a kind of middle ground then, up the extra foot
I
with
see
the
that
lattice
as a,
or wrought
I see
iron.
That as an added expense, and I'm inclined to go with a lower fence height just because I think, you know, part of the reality of living in a dense neighborhood, I don't see that it's a bad thing that you might want to lean over your fence and talk to your neighbor on occasion.
Yeah, but right. With small spaces, the privacy becomes especially important. So I'm sensitive to the blocking in kind of effect, but when you have a very small space, you do want it to be your own. And so if the applicant's requesting the extra height and not complaining about the expense of that, what about the extra foot with the maybe non-solid? If it helps people be more comfortable in their space.
Well, if we're looking for consensus, I like staff's interpretation that lower is better for this smaller stuff. And I would agree with Gene, you can buy 20-foot boards and 5-foot chunks or 4-foot chunks. And when you say 5-foot, they could even make them less, because there's many places that have 3-foot fences. The only purpose of it is to delineate what's yours and what's mine.
Right. Well, I'm not concerned about saving the applicant's money in this case, but I do see how it could increase the comfort level or the privacy level of the future residents.
I think the idea of talking to your neighbor once in a while.
A small space feels claustrophobic to me.
Yeah, but you could talk to your neighbor in the front yard. If you only have 100 square feet of backyard, maybe you want someplace not to.
Going for consensus here. Who wants the tall fence?
Well, I would like to make a comment. One of the things that I say this somewhat generically, one of the things I believe we keep striving for is, quote, affordable housing. In my opinion, we get into issues that probably unknowingly add additional cost, and whether we care or not, if it's the applicant, the end result is the cost of the house. Getting into issues in my opinion, of fencing, coloring the concrete, and the applicant is absolutely right. It is a separate application. It becomes, having done it personally and been involved in this, I guess I would encourage us to take a broader view of what we really want to accomplish. And if we really want to accomplish affordable housing or projects that are higher density, meet many needs by the varying sizes of the units, I would encourage us to not put our personal preferences in, but somewhat comply with the standards that exist. Having lived in a small space, having lived in a zero lot line project similar to this, I would agree with Commissioner Wyatt that the private backyard space is important. And yes, you do have plenty of opportunity in these types of projects to...
that I feel needs to be responded to. And I just think we need to keep in mind that, you know, while this is a what we call affordable by design project, which we've been pushing for, and again, I think it's a good project. I'm looking forward to ultimately supporting it. But it's not an affordable housing project in the sense that it has, you know, deed-restricted price controls on its resale value. And therefore, these units are going to sell for what the market will bear. So don't kid yourself by thinking, oh, if we require them to texture the sidewalk, they're going to tack another $1,000 onto the houses. The houses will sell for what the market will bear. And all of the design features that we're discussing, we're really talking about how they're going to affect the applicant's profit margin, which we need, we're sensitive to that as well. However, I do not subscribe to the idea that, you know, affordable by design units or affordable by deed restriction units need to look like cheap cardboard boxes. I think that it's very, very important, in fact, that we make sure that when affordable projects go forward, they go forward as, attractive developments with all of the amenities that we would require in any other type of housing development. And so I'm just putting that out there as a counterpoint to Commissioner Rappa as we go forward with these future discussions about the specifics of this project.
Well, just to chime in here, I fully agree with your comments. In this specific case of the fencing where we are, I would argue that the applicant is suggesting that the higher fence is less expensive, and at the same time, I would argue that the higher fence may better serve the residents and make for a better space. So I don't believe we have a conflict here between price and result. I think maybe the lower priced option could provide a better space for the residents, a better product.
I would agree. Are there others who agree? No. Three people. For
I don't really give a darn about the fence, to tell you the truth.
Then let's move. Then let's move on from.
Then does that mean we're going with staff on the fence height? Per staff.
I would hope we could agree.
Well, we're going to work our way through this thing.
To not go through that, or to allow for an extra foot of lattice, or somehow an extra foot of transparent height, because what you may get. Is if the fence isn't high enough to provide the screening the residents want, you may get some kind of ad hoc ugly stuff, which I do a fair bit of myself, and adding extra height with random poles and rebar that's around and scraps of wood, it doesn't look very good.
It sounds like you got an issue with your neighbor.
No, I do it myself.
Anyway,
I would hate to see that.
We all bring our own experiences to this, which help us make our decisions.
Madam Chair, I did forget one other change, and that's to the fencing that goes around the outside. The applicant's representative had mentioned the top cap and the 6x6 treated posts and et cetera, and staff is amenable to deleting those specific requirements and just leaving that it have some kind of architectural features. So it would say the design shall include architectural features, just so that you don't get a blank It's condition 10.
When the rubber meets the road, we got to have some conditions. Everyone's talked about stuff all over the map. I have no idea what condition we need to modify.
What I would like to do is to have us, I totally agree with Bob. We need to agree from what sheet we are going to work from. Is it going to be the big handout we got today?
Yes.
And with those numbers, the numbers that we have on here, the deletions, the corrections,
right.
It is then up to us to decipher between.
Right. And let's just start going
through. We're going with
thing.
This one. It's Exhibit B. It would be so helpful if we had dates or pages, but we don't.
Okay. And
if before we start going through these specifically, I did have a few more questions or recommendations that aren't currently listed on the conditions.
Absolutely.
Go through those first because they're still a little more general and not currently listed. Thank you. I just also would like to chime in. I think we're all supportive of this project, and I'm thrilled to see the variety of unit sizes. And I haven't seen too much of that. So to have some smaller units here, and as Commissioner Christie mentioned, and we're seeing some kind of affordability by design, I'm thrilled. I'd like us to see to do a little better maybe on this project. I think there are maybe a few more things we could do, so if the other commissioners will entertain some suggestions and the applicant, maybe we can do slightly better here. I also just think Commissioner Christie brought up the issue of affordability by design versus affordability by deed restriction. And I think that it sounds like from talking to the applicant that that's come up as sort of an issue here between the
We are under the assumption that these will sell for what the market will bear. And since they are not limited or deed restricted into the future, if for some reason San Miguel becomes the hot place to live and this is the hottest subdivision there and somebody is going to pay $700,000 for one of those three-bedroom units, then that's what they're going to pay for it. There's no limitation on that.
Okay, because we haven't talked about here the fact that the affordable housing or the workforce housing task force opted not to support this project. And I just thought it was an interesting note because it's probably the best project I've seen in terms of the possibility for affordability with some of these one-bedroom units. And it did interest me that the task force was asked to support this project and didn't. And so it just seemed to bring up the issue of affordability by design versus deed restriction. And it sounds like then they had a couple of issues and didn't support it, mostly because of the lack of deed-restricted units. So, all right, that was one thing just to talk about. Back to the affordability by design, I would just be curious whether any other commissioners, I asked the applicant if it might be possible to do away with a couple of the garages on some of the smaller units. The applicant's agent talked to that a little bit, but I would ask the commissioners maybe if we couldn't look at maybe nixing a couple of those garages. If we're talking about making small units for single people, our ordinance doesn't require that all units have garages. I think we require two parking spaces, one of them covered per unit right now. Is that correct?
Yeah.
The variables. But I would suggest that we could make some of these units maybe a little, well, I hate to say less desirable, but maybe I could say more appealing to some single people without stuff if we didn't put the garages on all of them. So I look at other commissioners. I think there's an opportunity to take away the garages completely. The applicant's already done away with the two-car garages on some of the units. But we have a pretty nice-looking structural style, thanks to the applicant and staff working together. But our layout would look a little better without a few of these garages, and we would provide a little more diversity of housing type if possibly we ask that the garages be deleted. I would propose from the three smaller units.
From the one-bedroom units?
From the one-bedrooms.
Which means they'd have to be replaced by a carport?
Would our code require a carport being put in then? One covered is what I'm thinking.
One covered, yes.
So that
would be a carport.
Would require some kind of carport. So it would require the applicant to come up with, or staff, some kind of protections so that...
Could a carport incorporate some storage shelves or storage units that...
The problem becomes then that's visible and usually end up having people not stay in those storage units entirely. But it is possible to do. You could do a enclosed. I've seen in other places where you have carports that they have small enclosed areas with a door.
Lockers, sort of.
Like a large locker.
This does become then a responsibility of the homeowners association, and in reality,
just to cut to the
very
chase.
Few people don't have stuff.
Let's just cut to the
but
chase.
But a few don't, and if it's really our intent,
okay, cut to the chase.
Out.
Bob wants to know how many people want to get rid of the garages.
I say leave it as it is.
I agree.
I would just. I would.
Okay,
I would,
we got three for leave it as it
I
is.
I would just try again, though, if we really want to provide diversity in housing type, as we say we do, and affordability by design, we may look, or I would encourage developers or future applicants to look at doing a little more of that and leaving out the garage.
Small steps. We're
may be a way.
Progressing.
Okay, I tried. I have a list of other things, and I'm sorry if everyone else is impatient here. But
No, go ahead.
I've been looking over the new LEED ND guidelines that the Green Building Council has put out, and so they're just in a pilot program of testing some projects against them now. But I took this project, and I looked at the new LEED ND design guidelines, and I looked at where this project comes in, against some of those guidelines, and it actually looks pretty good, but I'm going to try some more. I'm going to try a little more, and there are a few things I think where this project may be able to do better without adding a huge amount of extra expense at this point onto the backs of the applicants. So I would ask that maybe we could also add possibly that some bike racks or bike storage facility get moved to be placed somewhere. So that is a standard in the new sort of neighborhood design development guidelines. So I thought it isn't one that's overly burdensome for applicants.
It would just
so
take,
why not?
Just take because it would take away from the relatively small play area now.
To have an easy place to store five or six bikes?
Yes, because now that's five or that's 20 or 30 square feet that's not going to be available for this shaded play area or barbecue pit or whatever they're going to put there.
If the bikes are there and people are riding them, they actually take a lot more space if they're tipped over on the ground in a haphazard manner. So if you do want to argue efficiency of space, I would argue that it's much more efficient to have a nice placement system where they can be upright and organized.
And I don't think bike racks are very expensive. I mean, I've never installed
them. No, would the applicant be willing to add a bike rack in the common area?
I see nodding coming from the audience.
Yes, we would, but perhaps you would like to discuss all your design amenities, and then I could respond to them all at once.
Okay.
But
I just want to go.
Since this is an addition, well, a few things aren't on the condition, so I just wanted to bring them up in advance, so as we're going through, maybe we can try to do it in some orderly fashion. The other comment then, so we haven't discussed LEED certification for the structures themselves, so maybe the applicant's representative could come back and just talk to us a little more about that. In some of the last applications we've seen, I've seen some kind of county standard or a condition that the structures do better than average. A 10%, I think the last San Miguel subdivision we had, it was conditioned that the structures be at least 10% more efficient than the others in the area. And somehow that's sort of related to the LEED certification for energy efficiency. So I would ask the applicant and our commission to require that we do a little better than average here. I don't see any conditioning on energy efficiency. We're in a hot area. I would go as far, I would hope, for some kind of southern solar orientation so panels could go up at some point. I know that's too much to ask straight up here, but at least that we have some R better than R13, R17, or R30 insulation and some kind of reflective roofing material. some of those things don't cost very much to provide and can be a lot of energy savings in the future. So I would ask our commission to consider at least those things, at least in our, 17 or greater, I would suggest maybe an R30 insulation in the roof and walls and a reflective roofing, efficient roofing material or barrier.
Madam Chair, to jump in on the reflective roofing, typically we write conditions that say no reflective roofing because that affects neighboring properties if it's visually reflective. Now, I know that there are roofing materials that don't, I'm going to use really technical terms here, that don't suck in the sun.
That don't absorb.
Thank you, that don't absorb the sun, but push the sun away. But I would hesitate to use the word reflective. I mean, if you wanted to go that way, we'd probably have to craft some words so that it wasn't visually.
Without reflective. Getting into the details of what perhaps LEED certification might entail, which I think you're onto a very good point, we don't have to get into those details if we are to suggest that there be some type of LEED certification. Because it sets standards, and it sets all of those types of standards, and yet it allows the project owner to meet those in various ways and
right,
still be
it's
certified.
It's a point system in that case.
Exactly.
It's a point system. But I think there are a few basic sort of parts of this standard that we can ask for that aren't particularly expensive and that can provide a vast amount of efficiency improvement to the units, such as the insulation and the roofing. I can look for the wording in here. Probably reflective isn't the right word. But we were just talking about some kind of coating that reflects the heat back up and that may not, in fact, be expensive at all, much of an extra cost for the energy savings. So I'm just curious that hasn't been addressed at all here and wondering what we can do.
So aside from LEED certification, did you have another issue?
Well, I'm not...
I use that term generically.
Okay, because I'm not expecting that suddenly we go from not certified to certified at this hearing, but maybe we could take a few elements of the general certification that we know aren't difficult or expensive and ask for them, such as the insulation and possibly the roofing membrane.
Madam Chair, just to explain why the requirement for the higher level... Of energy efficiency isn't in these that you've seen in past projects. It's actually a requirement of Air Pollution Control District, and the reason
approach it by using what they call cool roofs, which is supposedly a new kind of product criteria, which has within it some component I know minimal about it, and there are other ways, and I think what we need to do is to get away from some of this. If Title 24 has been, the standards in Title 24 have been increased to reflect the energy conservation measures, maybe we need to educate ourselves on those. But there is a LEED certification program that people can go through and sort of be aware of how their project might kind of come out. And it allows for changes. And I mean, it is a point system, and it's a great way to do it. But for our purposes, if we can be comfortable that these are covered through the upgraded standards in Title 24, maybe that works.
It may, and I'm not familiar with how those standards have changed. So I would just ask staff, for example, what level of insulation rating we would expect then the Title 24 would require. I would hope better than a 13 or at least.
Oh, yeah, I think it's R30.
17 or 30?
R30.
Required?
Yeah.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Well, maybe that's much of that is covered then. Then I'm just not knowledgeable.
You're learning.
Enough to understand.
Along with us.
Okay. A few more things on the list. So I, again, just really look forward to supporting this project and do want to applaud the applicants. A lot of the LEED Indy items are covered. It's compact. There are diversity of housing type, relatively close to transit, compact development. We could do better than on some affordable deed-restricted units, but we may be doing that in the future through ordinance change. So, all right, I'll leave that one alone. I think everybody's impatient, although you're sitting quietly. I guess I'm a little bit curious why this project seems to have been so difficult to get through, or I'm a little bit frustrated to hear from the applicants maybe that somehow having this diversity of housing size, of having some of the smaller units, has seemed to them maybe to make this a harder project to get through the process.
Madam Chair, I have to tell you it was exactly the opposite. When this project was first submitted, it was a single type of unit, and it was through negotiations with staff that we came up with a mixture of types of units and a design. As the applicant's representative mentioned, we actually sent it to an outside consultant to look at the design because this is such an awkward shaped lot, and we did want to try and maximize the number of units. And the original proposal was the manufactured housing. It was a single type of housing reproduced on the site over and over again, and I'd be happy to show you that original site plan, but this is just such a better project. This is a great project, and staff's very happy to support this project.
Okay. Thank you for some clarification there. All right. Those are general things. I'm ready to get on with the point-by-point conditions here. Thank you for indulging me.
Oh, well, thank you for your comments. At least I guess I speak for all of you sometimes. I guess that's okay.
Your job.
I guess so. Okay.
And
we have all.
Madam
I'm sorry.
Chair.
Yes.
I was thinking that before you get into the point-by-point conditions, the open space issue that I had discussed earlier, I just wanted to clarify with staff, the open space easement is going to cover the 2,500 square foot common open space area. Is that correct? I was looking at condition number 30. And but it also mentions vehicle and pedestrian areas and guest parking areas. So is that the open space easement is going to be over a portion of lot 24, is that correct? Or all of the lot?
Mr. Orton, all of the lot.
All the lot?
Yes.
Okay. I was thinking that in condition number one, in the first sentence where it currently says a 2,500 square foot common parcel, I would suggest having that read a 2,500 square foot common open space area instead of parcel.
Because the parcel sort of indicates it's
another
a separate
lot.
Unit.
Yeah, and I think that answers the question there. And then I thought on condition 30, why don't we just say an open
one side is all part of lot 23. Is that correct?
Yes.
What is confusing about this is that a planned development has a common area, it's called that, and then we have common open space with the shared part, and the terminology gets confusing. I'm sorry.
Okay.
But you're correct. It is lot.
Okay. Let me ask the preference of the commission. We have a revised Exhibit B, which is this thick thing that we've all been handed.
Actually, it's also a BND.
Okay, BND. Can we go through this as the document we work from in reference to?
Yes, that's what we're going to do.
Yes.
If you'll ever let me.
Oh, my goodness. Testy.
Well, we're talking about these things which are general ordinance requirements and affordable housing, and they're all good to do, but we're trying to push a project through what has certain conditions. We don't like them.
Why don't you begin, Mr. Rose?
Okay, and I'm dealing with the handout B and D, and I'm going to start with B in the very first page, and the changes that we have made to that, Mr. Orton has just read into condition one. He got rid of the word parcel and change it with open space area. Now, is anyone else who wants to change anything on that? And I would ask if Madam Chair, if you could bring Ms. Giardini back to the microphone here.
Why don't, that's okay, all right.
Because we're going to have some disagreements on some.
Ah, wonderful, okay.
And on the second page, I don't see any changes that we need to make there. And on the third page, we've got down to condition 23, and I have a question mark here. And I think this was related to the various facades.
We had a disagreement on 16. Do we want to come to agreement on that? We had a request from the applicant, but we also had a response from staff regarding the recordation of the map.
16. Okay, moving back up to 16. I have no idea what the issue was there.
This is the date and person who prepared the report are to be noted on the map.
I don't believe there's disagreement with that. We agree with the applicant.
Okay,
everybody agree. Now we're going down to 23. I don't even recall what the issue was there. Is anybody getting a complaint with how it's written now, including the applicant?
I have to read through it because these are new to me.
I was hoping you'd do that while we were having our esoteric discussions.
I know, but I have to listen to what you're saying, too. So.
We don't. Always.
I don't see anything on my notes about 23.
I thought there was comments on 22.
Yeah, 22 is...
It's the... Okay, and... Cammie clarified the shaded play structure area, and if its trees are acceptable, then we have no problems with that.
Great. We've moved on from 22. There was no disagreement on 23.
Right. We're planting a tree, and that's good enough.
Okay.
And 23, we're okay. I don't want to change it if we don't.
No, Madam Chair, on 22, I would recommend that just for everybody's making sure that everybody's on the same page, that we just add this can include trees into that condition.
Okay, so a new sentence which would say?
How about a tree-shaded stilt children's play area?
Yeah.
That would be make a lot of sense.
We're in
the applicant
the
have
word,
a problem with that?
We're injecting the word tree in front of shaded.
Okay.
Okay, well, great. We got that then. Okay. We're leaving 23. We're moving on to 25. Now we're going
to 24.
24. What's the issue on 24?
The textured pathways. Well, could we have some clarification then from Public Works, Mr. Marshall, on the textured part?
Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. As much as I would like to be able to, I do not consider myself an expert on the details of ADA requirements. I know that the goal is to provide a smooth and firm surface for all persons of all abilities, and it is possible to have a certain amount of indentation that still meets the needs of all persons, but I don't have the specifics of that. I would certainly encourage... I think you have a subjective decision about whether or not you think color is of enough value to be worth the cost. In terms of texture, I think I would recommend that you put in something like texturing unless determined not consistent with ADA requirements as determined by the building official.
Well, why don't we just say ADA like compliant colored and or textured?
Right, before we go there, let's just try this.
If you require it along that length of that sidewalk, you can't just texture portions of it because you have to go out there with the pads and
well, okay, I think we understand that the problem is, one, how many commissioners would care to see implementation of the plan that's submitted, which is basically the walkways and some of the other differences.
No, that's not what's...
That's what the applicant is requesting. Staff is suggesting the sidewalks.
Staff is suggesting that both the interior sidewalks and the areas that the applicant shows as red on their colored site plan be either colored and or textured.
Right. And the applicant is...
And I'll say no to that.
I do too.
Okay,
that's what I'm trying to get to.
Well, I'd like to see, is there some other way we can demarcate or set off the pedestrian areas? Because if there is no difference, it is a problem and a discouraging factor for pedestrians that there it's not separated.
But this is
so
not,
if we want to encourage pedestrians.
This is not 12th Street. This is a little private driving.
I know, but if you're always at the mercy of cars and they're
well,
not
no, it's
any
going
attention.
To be a sidewalk. It's not that it's not going to be a sidewalk.
No, it won't be a sidewalk. If it's poured, from what I understand, if it's poured at the same time using the same materials, there isn't a curb, gutter, and sidewalk there. There's not enough room.
There's a flat surface with a rolled curb, is I believe what the applicant has suggested. Now, the difference between a rolled curb and a straight curb sometimes helps people, but honestly, rolled curbs, people kind of park on them.
Well, that's part of the problem. That's exactly the point.
These are
because it's not clear they're for pedestrians.
This is, we're not talking about changing the configuration of the curb.
Right.
We are talking
so that's
about
why
adding
the color.
A color to
correct.
It.
Right.
Well, and the curb will have to break every place there is a driveway or a parking area, and you'll note on the site plan that there won't be very much curb there because there's a lot of driveways and parking areas. And it really was the idea there was just to provide a delineation. I guess my question is if you're bringing on the colored concrete for those areas, what's the difference with bringing on more colored concrete?
Yeah, that's my thought. If you're going to be coloring these areas, why can't you just color the rest of it?
It has to do with how many truckloads you're going to be bringing in to site. Again, going back to sustainability, that color is a mineral that has to be mined. Well, so is concrete. And again, that you're adding
there's
another
considerable
area that
cost.
It's going to have to end up on the homeowners who are, you know, trying to keep their expenses on a monthly basis down because this is going to have to be resealed almost every year to keep the color in.
Well, I thought the reseal was if you came in after the uncolored concrete was poured and you did the application
it's not. Whether
afterwards.
You do the application while it's in the truck or while it's in the mixing plant or you do the application as troweled in, it has to be resealed almost yearly to keep that color in there.
Even if it's mixed into
yes,
the
it does
concrete
fade.
Stuff?
It fades with time.
Do you have any experience on this?
The only experience I have is my neighbor has a colored concrete driveway area that's, you know, had the pressed things in it. He never maintains it. It looks just as good as the day it was done.
I would suggest that this isn't a huge expense and would help make it safer for pedestrians.
It actually is
to function.
Quite a large expense.
Well, we need to move off of colored concrete. Bob and I prefer just to see what the applicant has submitted. I'm taking it there are three people who wish to leave condition number 24 alone. Am I understand? I know, Bob. I don't agree, but I'm just trying to move on.
And I'm just kind of waiting. Gene hasn't told me one way or the other.
With us. You can decide with us over here, Gene.
Pick a side, Gene. Let's go.
I don't care.
Okay, come with us.
You don't care.
Well, that's per staff, then. We don't have three votes to change it.
So if you don't care, then we're going with the what the applicant has submitted.
No, if he doesn't care, then we're going per staff. Because that's what's before.
My motion.
I didn't hear a motion.
No, we're just trying to see if we can reach consensus on this.
If there's something else.
I think per staff gives the applicant a great deal of latitude and flexibility to come up with an affordable, sensible approach that they can incorporate into the design that benefits pedestrians without creating a huge burden on the cost of the project or, you know, the resources involved.
Well, along those lines, Commissioner Christie, how about loosening up the condition then to read that the interior sidewalk shall provide for some kind of delineation, and then it's whether it's colored or textured or something
right.
else.
Right, marked in some other way.
We can just loosen that condition up.
Maybe we can think of some other way. Could
okay, I heard three are going to go for the interior sidewalks.
With lots of
with the addition
of
onward to
25. What was our consensus? We're going 5 or 6 foot fences.
Yeah. I'd like to go with the applicant on this one. If they want 6,
that's 1.
I'm going with staff on 5.
You're 5.
Either way, I don't care. Either
you've got to be more discerning. Maybe not on this one. Where are you, Bob?
I'm with five.
You got to be. I'm with six, personally. So you got to make a choice again. Putting you in the hot seat here today,
it's up to you, buddy. We're going five or six. We've got two for five, two for six.
Oh, my God.
All the tension is
nuts.
10-foot boards, cut them in half, Gene. That's right. Yeah.
That's not standard.
Oh,
property rights.
If I might add something, when we were discussing it, 5 versus 6 feet, you also have to be careful of how much visualization goes in. You're going to be looking across the fences into their windows, too. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting in that in other projects I've had that be a concern that they not be able to look in other people's windows, and then this condition is telling me to allow that. So it's really hard to design a project when I get stuff from all over the place. But anyway, we would prefer 6 foot for the privacy.
Okay, I prefer staff's.
All right, 5 foot fences.
5 foot it is. Okay, was there a concern about the setback of 5 feet?
Yeah, on two or three units there was. They didn't meet setback. It needed to be reduced to 3 feet, reduced to 3 feet.
So how are we going to take care of that? Because we have all fencing shall be set back a minimum of 5 feet from the front exterior wall of each unit.
You could add a condition that says, except that should fencing interfere with window treatment or windows in the building, then it can be moved to reduced to 3 feet.
Is
staff okay with
fine.
That?
Okay, read that in the record, staff.
Except that where fencing interferes with the location of windows, the setback can be reduced to 3 feet.
Okay.
Okay. And then moving on down to condition 30, Mr. Orton wanted the open space easement show recorded for lot 23, including the common open space area. Vehicle, pedestrian access,
right,
et cetera. Okay. Moving on to nothing on 32, 33, or 34, 36, 37, 38, or 39 through 41. We're dealing with them little kit foxes. And 42 through 46, 47, or 48. We got down to condition 50. We deleted that.
Right.
Okay, and we're renumbering everything,
right.
And I'm going through.
We also, under 51D,
51.
2, D, whatever it is, 2, there's a that was changed, right?
Air conditioner, mechanical ventilation?
Yeah, it was deleted. Something's hanging around here.
On which one?
No, it actually was just a change in the format.
Okay.
When you run this program, that's what it
does. Okay. You guys, maybe we just...
So we finished E, and then F, G, H, and I, and several more pages of Kit Fox stuff. Now I'm condition 52. Again, we... back to the fencing. All interior fencing shall be set back a minimum of 5 feet. Oh. And your language, Cammie?
Except where the fencing interferes with the location of windows, the setback can be reduced to 3 feet.
Okay. And that finishes all of Exhibit B. Now we're going to D as in Delta. The conditional use permit...
Is this where we should discuss the bike rack, since the applicant was amenable?
We'd stick it in here if somebody wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm. Somebody does.
Somebody doesn't count. Three somebodies do count.
Three somebodies.
Let me see here. I think you could stick it in where it talks about the play structure.
You could do it in 1C.
1C.
Thank you. Somebody has eyes.
So do we have three somebodies?
We'll add a D, potentially add a D.
Or you could just add a bench, garden, and shaded area, and bicycle.
Tree-shaded. Tree-shaded children's play area.
Tree-shaded.
A tree-shaded.
And bicycle rack to accommodate four bikes at least.
Just put bicycle. Bike rack. And appropriate play area ground cover. Got it?
Yep. Okay, now we've moved on to the next page, which is condition 10.
Got a bike rack.
Staff would recommend deleting second to the last sentence, atop cap, comma, 6x6 treated post, comma, and other, and just have the sentence read, the proposed fence is wood, if the proposed fence is wood, comma, the design shall include architectural features.
If I'm sorry, what condition were you on, Bob?
10.
10.
Okay, so you're taking out top cap and 6x6. And just leaving architectural features.
And then they can do whatever works out for them best.
All right.
Okay. And
condition 11, you'd need to put in that same, except where the fencing.
The 3-foot thing.
Yes. Interferes with the location of windows, the setback can be reduced to 3 feet.
Okay, that finishes that page. Next page, 16 through 19. We didn't do anything there.
Excuse me, condition 12 needs the same changes, equivalent changes that we did to 1C in terms of tree-shaded play equipment.
Actually, in that one, it's written right. Tree-shaded children's play area that includes a children's play structure.
Well, okay.
Okay, so all we're adding there
that,
is...
That would have been the best wording to have used all along through it.
So that only thing we added there was tree.
Yeah.
Okay, I hope the secretary is getting all this, because I'm not reading it again.
I hope you don't.
Okay, I'm on conditions 24, 25. Again, we're dealing with those kit boxes, which undoubtedly abound in downtown San Miguel.
Oh, absolutely.
They used to.
And I'm over to noise, and we're done.
I have one comment in the staff report for the setbacks.
Staff report, no, I don't think that's not part of my motion. Right?
Well, the problem is that, and maybe we need to confer with Cami on the staff report for the setbacks under that table. The 10-foot is incorrect. As you can see, some of the setbacks are 5 feet. And so for the rear yards, as I'm reading them, that was the part that was confusing. And so I want to make sure that that's cleared so that when we go to build the houses, we have the right setback.
Ms. Griffin, could you respond to that?
We can go down to 5. It looks like some of them actually meet 10, but you're right, some of them are smaller on the
north side.
Why don't we just amend the table to say in rear 5 to 10?
That works fine with me.
That's fine.
Okay. But that, just like the San Miguel Advisory Groups, I'm not making part of my motion.
Just another question. Did the landscaping then get handled with number 31 in Exhibit B? Was that dealt with in this new condition? Whatever the issue was when the landscaping gets approved, I wasn't clear on.
That was handled by staff, and they agreed that it would be at the time that you get occupancy for the building permits so that you weren't putting in landscaping prior to the buildings being built.
Okay, so that's handled. 31 is the way you want it.
The 31 deals with submitting the landscape plans. 32 deals with the installation. We took care of their concern with the installation.
Oh, right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for that clarification.
All right. Other commissioners, we've all sort of chimed in here, but are there other changes, conditions, changes, comments, anything people wish to add?
No.
Not hearing any. I got a motion for you.
Can I just make a quick comment? I don't know how we all arrived at this project, but I think it goes a long way in meeting. Aside from all the little issues we've talked about, one of the things that I believe make neighborhoods better is where you have a diversity of residents in the neighborhood, and the diversity many, many times comes from the size of the homes and all of that. And I think this is a very nice project. And in some ways, I'm sorry we've gone an hour or whatever kind of nitpicking at some things, when I do think that this is a good project, and a good project for San Miguel, too.
Well, and I was going to hold my comments and speak to the motion, but I just really wanted to commend the applicants and really thank and praise the staff for going the extra mile to, and Commissioner Rose, too, who I understand played a role, to go the extra mile to really demonstrate that y'all have been hearing the concerns we've been raising, and that we really do have the...
If it's B and D, and then I'm using the staff handed out packet that they gave us today with all the changes that we just made in the record.
And I want to second that.
Further discussion? Roll call, please.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Melsko?
Yes.
Chairperson Rappa?
Yes. Just one further final comment. We allow for tandem parking, but we really, I think we have more opportunities to use it, and I guess I would like to see us somehow look at that use so that people are encouraged to. I think we take up too much of space
I would agree with you, and I bet Eric Greening, who's not here, would also agree with you on that.
Okay. I would agree, and just also I hope we could think about doing away with some of the garages, take it a step further, that we don't all need to provide a lot of space to store junk.
Okay.
Before I make a motion to receive all the materials accepted today in the public record, whatever happened to that petition, make it back down to the secretary. Okay. And with that, move that we accept all the materials accepted today in the public record.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. We will adjourn to...
next to lunch.
To our next meeting, whatever. July 12th. All right.